Hello, everyone that's joined us already. We're I don't think Mary Kay has shared her screen quite yet, but we'll be shortly. Something I forgot. We're going to do also the conference call is being recorded, and we're also going to be recording the webinar, although we haven't started that recording just yet. So. And we'll get started here in just a couple minutes.
Okay. Oh, gosh, share document. Okay. Oh, my goodness. Whoever that is, I hope you're okay. Can you see my screen now, Megan?
I sure can. Yep.
Welcome, agenda announcements, questions, crosswalk.
Yep.
All right.
I'm going to go ahead and start recording, Mary Kay.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks. It's noon, everybody, and we'll get started in just a couple minutes.
We had a couple people just join us. We'll get started in just a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Is that on side B? Okay. I don't know where Janelle's got the schedule.
Oops.
Yeah, Janelle should be back up. Yeah, she should be. Here you go. Perfect. There's something going on in B, till, but... A, I think it's open. There's nobody in there. Megan will mute everybody's lines in a couple of minutes. In the meantime, you might want to mute your lines if you're doing what I was doing until a minute ago, which is multitasking.
Special thanks to the...
And don't put your phones on hold. Megan, you still there?
I am.
All right. Let's wait maybe one more minute and then get started. I hate to start early for people that are joining, especially, I know the first time I use a webinar program.
Hi, this is Susan Med.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Karen and Kelly are on from Dawn.
Awesome. Hey,
hi, Karen.
Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
Glad you guys are on.
Hello.
you can just...
Megan, what do you think?
Yep, let's go. So, I just want to let everybody know that I'm going to mute everyone, just as we did in the last couple of calls. If you would like to respond to a question or make a comment, all you need to do is unmute your line, *6, and that will allow everyone to hear you. So, and just as a reminder, Mary Kay, you need to do that, otherwise we can't hear you. So, I will mute everyone right now.
You are now in silent mode.
Okay, everybody, the reason I'm laughing is because I was sitting here trying to remember what I had to do after that. Okay. All right, everybody, thanks for your patience. Let's go ahead and get started. There's still people coming on the line, which is great, but I want to go ahead and get started. Cindy is having problems with connection. I don't know if anybody else has had or not. So if anybody's having connection problems, you can write in the chat and let us know. Otherwise, I'm going to assume that everybody's doing okay. So we've got a couple of announcements before we get started. And one is that I sent the appointment for this meeting to one person today and clicked on the choice that said send to added participants only, but apparently it sent and resent to many participants. So if that happened to you, I apologize. Not sure what occurred. And if you got anything new or different on the appointments today, don't worry about it. And also, if your appointments for these meetings the second Tuesday of the month at noon central disappeared, please let Megan or I know. If you are not on the webinar portion today, please send an email to Megan or I to let us know, or you can email continuinged@metastar.com, which is the word continuing dash ed at metastar, metastar.com. So if you are on the phone only, please do send us an email to let us know you're on. Otherwise, we should have your information. Megan, did you want to talk about the fall sessions at all?
I sure will. So we will be having, like last year, the program we had in October at the Marriott in Middleton. We'll actually be offering two programs this year, one here in Madison on Monday, November 13th at Mary Kay's other home at MetaStar, which is sort of on the, I don't know what side of Madison.
Central Belt. Central Belt Line, I would say, by
Central Belt Line. There we go.
Yeah, for those of you from Madison.
And then the other program will actually be on Friday, November 3rd, somewhere in the southern Michigan area, probably either Grand Rapids or Lansing we're looking at. So those of our Michigan folks who would care to join us, that would be super. Otherwise, we'll be having the one in Madison, and anyone, of course, is welcome to attend any one of the programs. So,
Thanks,
and send me an email if you have questions about anything related to those.
Thanks. So,
or anything else, I guess.
I've been emailing her all morning. Michigan folks, again, November 3rd, Southern Michigan, or you don't have to attend both of these, or in Madison, November 13th. And I just want to, make a pitch for if you can attend in person. I'm not sure that we're going to do a Skype meeting like we did last year. It's really hard to do a live meeting and to run a Skype meeting. So I really want to encourage in-person attendance. We'll probably, hopefully, be focusing more on activities and things to do this year rather than just me talking. So I would really encourage you to attend in person if at all possible. Okay. Thanks, Megan.
You bet.
So we've got the sessions for the Madison and the Michigan dates. I did want to address a couple questions that came up in this call, and if people have thoughts on this or ideas, Megan, we may need to unmute for people to talk. So
they can unmute themselves, just so you know.
Star six. Great. Thank you. So the question was, we now have a checklist at the end of the new provider educational activity record form, and the checklist indicates that, says the number of contact hours awarded for the activity and the method of calculation needs to be recorded in the activity record form. And so a question came up, someone's doing an online activity, so an enduring material, posted online, and they were wondering how people that do online activities record the information needed from participants to keep track of contact hours. And they know that here in my other head at MetaStar, we can use a link, we can do the evaluation, so if we want it to be anonymous, we can have someone do the evaluation, and then we can just put another link at the end of the survey and collect information as far as who was on, who did the activity, how long it took them, how many contact hours they got, et cetera, so we can keep that in a completely separate area of data. So we have the information we need on contact hours, but it's separate from the evaluation results. So I wondered if anybody out there had any other way that they provide an anonymous survey for an online activity, yet still collect the information needed to provide contact hours. So just give you a few seconds if anybody is in that boat. Please let me know. Okay. All right. Hearing none, for the person that asked the question, I guess the way that MetaStar does theirs with a separate link to identify the information, we still have the information we need to do the contact hour records, but we're separating it from the actual evaluation of the activity. Most of our evaluations aren't anonymous anymore. Again, speaking from my MetaStar hat, there's pros and cons to that, and I know there's still, depending on what the culture of your organization is, there might still be a desire to keep evaluations anonymous. So anybody thinks of anything else on that or wants to share something, you can always email afterwards as well. Okay, and that was the only, I think, the only shareable question that I got this month. There was a question regarding NARS, and first of all, if you're not on NARS yet or you don't know what NARS is, please let me know. We need to get everybody up and running on that. That's the system by which you'll submit your information for your annual report this year, and that goes right to ANCC. So if you don't know what NARS is, please let me know, and we'll get you going on that. And there is a recording of the NARS webinar. I don't think the slides are up there, but there's a recording of the NARS webinar that can get you started on the WNA website. And the question that came up had to do with something that's in NARS, which is not a required question, but it asks about competence, performance, and patient outcomes. So all I'm going to say about that right now is that when it talks about measuring performance, that's talking about that long-term evaluation that you do. When you go back and you ask the participant, did you use this knowledge in practice since our session was held 2 months ago, a month ago, whenever it was? Or it's when you go out on the floor or have somebody observe, was there a change in practice behaviors after you did a particular education session. So when we're talking about performance or measuring performance, as the question is set up in NARS, again, not a required question, measuring performance is measuring, did a change happen after your education session? Measuring competence has a whole different meaning than we're used to. For the purposes of the NARS question, measuring competence means asking someone if they are able to use the information. Did their knowledge increase? Would they be able to use this in practice? So I don't want to go any further into it than that, except, number one, the question in NARS is not required. Number two, the term competence as it's used in NARS is different than we're used to hearing. And number three, when we talk about measuring performance, we're talking about what we're used to calling long-term evaluation. And then patient outcomes, again, if you have patient data, you can measure patient outcomes. So the terms come out of CME. We use them for our CME program all the time. We're not used to hearing them in CNE, and I think it's going to be a while before we need to be concerned about it, but I thought it was a really good question, so I wanted to share that with you. All right, any other questions before we start talking about the crosswalk, which Megan sent out with a reminder notice? Anybody else have any questions? Okay.
Yeah, it's Rita.
Hi, Rita.
Hi.
I don't mind your questions at all.
The education-approved activity, the long form, the new one. My question is, I know we don't need the education planning tables anymore, and I know we can use it if we want, but I'm trying to think when, because I had a class last week, and explain this, and I thought, if you have like an all-day conference, can you just list the citations for all the different sessions, or do you need an EARF for each one?
If they're
going to attend the whole day.
Yep. Good question. If you have a conference, it would be nice if you could, after you list the citation, just make a note of what session it's for, like, 8:30 breakout.
Okay. Or you could put the title.
Yeah, or you could list the title and the citations used that way. So that's a really good question. I'm just wondering if there's another format that might be more helpful now that we have that. Let me think about that. That's great. So to answer your question, if you document on your activity record form and if a reviewer from WNA picked that up and looked at it, what we need to know is just what sessions match which citations. And I can see that could be done a number of different ways.
Right. Okay, so, well, I'll go with that for now, and I'm just trying to
The other thing is, Rita, we're not saying you absolutely cannot use the education planning table, because sometimes it's really useful for communicating with your speakers. It can be really useful. So what we are saying is we will no longer be looking for that educational planning table in your sample activities that you submit with your every 3-year application to WNA.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. And then I'm not sure I still have a good handle then on the, I think I understand the blending, but for the enduring, you just use the same form, the EARF, and just go through all that. I understand the blending.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, you do. You fill out an activity record form if you have an enduring material. You just fill out the activity record form. I think the question comes in, and it's a good one. There's organizations, Sharon, that have quite a few activities that they do live, and then they will, like a live webinar, and then they turn those into enduring materials, and there is a shorter form that you can use for that. I have not had a chance to review that yet. We've had some members of the WNA Seek Committee make suggestions to shorten that, so I will look to do that. But that's only for the form you use when you turn a live webinar into a posted webinar, basically.
Okay.
Okay.
And that's not available yet, even.
It is available. It just hasn't been revised yet. It hasn't been, So it's on the, I believe it's on the WNA website.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. Thank you.
One last thing is the biographical data form, the new one up there. I haven't checked. I've been busy like everyone.
No, that's fine.
I have one with grant changes, and I don't, last when I was on there, I got the new one for the EARF, but I didn't see the biographical data form.
Okay. Megan and I can check with Brianna to see if it's not posted, we can get it posted.
Okay. All right. That's it for now.
All right. Thank you. No, that's great. Okay. All right. I don't see or hear any other questions. So, I have been requested to update a crosswalk that was done when the criteria changed, the 2015 ANCC criteria changed, and I did a crosswalk from the 2013 to the 2015 criteria, and a question came up from several people, can you update this now that WNA has aligned specifically with the ANCC criteria and is no longer requesting anything extra. Could you please update it so we know what we need, basically what do we need to do now? So there is, as a handout Megan sent with the call information, there is a handout that we'll go over, and I've got it. Megan, if you're there, can you see my screen?
I can.
Awesome. Okay. So I'm going to go through this, and please stop me if you have questions. For some of you, I think this will be really good information. Some people, you might feel like you've got it all down. If you do, please share. If there's any tips you have for anybody, please share those, because I would really like it. This call might be mostly me, but I would really like it if people that share their expertise. I always appreciate that because we all have different experiences, and I think we can all learn together from each other. Okay, so joint providership. This does not pertain to everybody. This is when you have another organization at the table planning an activity with you. So you are the provider, they are the joint provider, and you may have several if you're planning a conference with other people. So it's someone who's actually at the table planning, and that's a special case because you're the provider and you need to make sure that you are in charge of the activity. So you need to make sure that you have a nurse planner on the committee who's active and responsible for the criteria, providers awarding the contact hours. There is a statement that you need to have on the promotional material that goes on, hang on, sorry. Here is a statement, and it's, I actually added the example and put it right on this crosswalk. So if you do joint providership, you need a special statement on the promotional material. What is different now is that a joint provider agreement is no longer required for approved providers. When ANCC came out with this in 2015, we said, ooh, and there were several reasons for wanting to keep the joint provider agreement. Again, aligning now with ANCC so that everybody's on the same page. A joint provider agreement is no longer required for providers. I have a caveat here, a recommendation, and this is the same recommendation that ANCC provided to the approvers. It's still a good business idea to have a written record of agreements with other organizations, so we don't want to discourage that. It's just that we are no longer going to look at it as part of your educational activity record, so it is not a required document, okay? So you do not need to, you don't need to have a joint provider agreement. Sorry, Dan. Okay. So let's see. There we go. Sorry, this takes me a few minutes, you guys. Okay. So with that, oops. Sorry. Actually, I will. We'll go back to that in a little bit. Right, does anybody have any questions about joint providership? I know it doesn't apply to everybody, but if it applies to you, we would be asking for, in your activity files, if you do jointly provide, we would be asking for a record of that. So if you do joint provide, plan to share that with plan to share an activity record with WMA that you jointly provide when you submit your application every 3 years. So when you submit your application every 3 years, you submit, if you have any commercial support records, any enduring material records, and now any joint provider records. So let's talk about joint providership just for another minute or two. Megan, can you see the poll that's up here?
I can, yep.
Okay, do you want to take the poll that's up here?
Do I want to do what?
Do you want to take the poll?
Yes, I
do. Do you
want
to answer the poll?
No.
Okay, for those people on the webinar, let's see what you think. Joint providership used to be called, this is kind of a no fair because I didn't specifically talk about this. Joint providership, which of these are true? Used to be called joint sponsorship, before that co-sponsorship, and you should not use those terms anymore. It requires a written agreement with the joint provider and the provider. It requires a statement on the promotional materials on who's offering the contact hours. For number one and three above, or all of the above? Okay, if you're on the webinar, let's see if this poll is going to work.
Does it seem to allow us to vote?
Oh. Okay, that's a bummer. Thanks for letting me know that. Okay, so the answer to the question is 1 in 3 above. It did used to be called joint sponsorship. It did used to be called co-sponsorship. Please don't use those terms anymore. They are very outdated, and if you're planning with another organization at the table, please call that joint providership. It does not require a written agreement, as we just said. It does require a statement on promotional material as far as who's offering the contact hours. So hopefully that would be pretty straightforward based on what we just talked about. Okay.
Mary Kay?
Yeah. This is Joyce. So for the things that have been removed, like the joint provider agreement, for those of us who will be submitting our application soon, should we remove those from programs that we joint provided before the change went into effect?
You know what, Joyce, that is a great question. And no, I wouldn't bother to remove them. Okay. If you want to, you can, but if they're in there, you won't be, like, counted down for having them.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's part of your record, it's in the middle of your record is page numbered, you know, don't worry about taking it out. We won't count you off for having it in there.
Okay, thank you.
Great question. Okay. All right, so gap analysis had the biggest change in 2015, and when we introduced this, I think it took everybody a while to get used to. The main thing to know about the gap analysis is there really has not been any changes to that since when the criteria was introduced in 2016. So the key points of that would be, and I know I've said this a million times, but to make sure all of your CNE is developed based on a need for new knowledge, a problem in practice, or a need for improvement. The gap analysis, we used to have a gap analysis worksheet, and I believe that's still on the website. The gap analysis worksheet really is embedded into the educational activity record form. It walks you through the same steps as the old gap analysis worksheet, so you don't have to have a gap analysis worksheet. You just need to fill out that section in the educational activity record form. Another thing that people miss a lot is the evidence. So the educational activity record form asks you for evidence of the gap, and that means your actual survey results that you used to establish your gap, or a summary of the literature, including where you got the literature from, and whatever information you used to establish that there was a gap in practice or skills or knowledge needs to be in your educational activity record form. If it's really long, like if you have a survey that you use to establish a gap, and that survey is 20 pages long, please highlight the relevant information so that the reviewers can find that. So I know it's easier to put in your entire survey, but when we're looking at your activity record form, we're really focusing on what the gap is and how did you find that. And it's really difficult to do when you put in 20 pages of evaluation. You can do that. Just please highlight how you used, for example, if you use a survey or evaluation, please highlight in your results what's relevant. Okay, there's not really anything new as far as learner engagement strategies or learning outcomes is just the same as it was. I want to talk for just a minute about needs assessment because I still think we're using that term differently. So needs assessment used to be that survey that we all sent out to our staff every year to get ideas for what topics we should have the following year. You can still do that, But really, as you plan your activities, they need to be based on a gap. So if you do identify your topics via a survey to your staff, you want to make sure that you're wording your questions in a way that helps you identify gaps. You can, you know, ask instead of saying, what are you interested in this year, ask what people are having trouble with, what are the issues they're having, what are they seeing, interdisciplinary issues, nursing issues, clinical issues. You really want to be identifying a gap. If you send out a survey, a broad survey to your nursing staff about what they want for the following year. So, again, you can still do that, but you need to use that information a little bit differently. The other thing to know is that when we talk about needs assessment now, we're really talking about what happens after the gap analysis. So you do your gap analysis, you look at your data, see where a problem is, walk through what's the problem, what are people doing now, well, what's the lack of knowledge or skill, and then what should they be doing, what would be the ideal state, and then don't stop there. Now when we talk about needs assessment, we're really talking about that underlying educational needs assessment. So after a gap is identified, what do you do to figure out whether a gap is in knowledge, skill, or practice? So the take home from this is to take a look at this page and read it over, because I think we're still using the term needs assessment in a couple of different ways, and it can be really confusing. So when we use the term, when WNA uses the term needs assessment now, it is referring to that after the gap, how do you assess if the gap is in knowledge, skills, or practice? Okay? Learning outcomes, there's no changes. Just at the end of this document, there are several examples that ANCC has provided. And they still have the format of the gap analysis worksheet. But if you're having issues with learning outcomes or teaching nurse planners or anybody really to talk through learning outcomes, what they are, why we use them, and what's a good example of one, look at the last few pages of the crosswalk, because that really walks through what they are, what they aren't, and what they look like. Okay? That's still one area that we're having a lot of issue with, as far as what do we mean by learning outcomes as opposed to objectives. So, and we're, of course, no longer using objectives. And we still see those from time to time. Okay, learner engagement strategies, not much new there. As far as the criteria goes, there's no new requirements. Learning outcomes, again, if you identify a gap in skill or practice, you're probably not going to be able to address that with a straight-up lecture and expect something to change. So the other thing I would say about remember that your learning outcomes, we all used to say objectives have to be measurable and we put the right verbs there, but learning outcomes you really do need to be able to measure, and you need to measure them, which is why you can always measure them with that question on the evaluation. Are you going to be able to use this knowledge in practice? Okay, it's a little bit of a cheat, but it's perfectly acceptable. All right, so I'm really disappointed that you guys can't do the poll, but we'll put it up here anyway. Okay, so needs assessment.
Let's see which of these are true. Is now referred to as the process of delving into the gap to identify if the gap is in knowledge, skill, or practice. Think about, is that true? Did she just say that? It's an assessment of an underlying need of what's causing the gap. It's also referred to sometimes as that old-fashioned survey that we used to send out to all of our staff. And I can tell you, I can take the poll, and the answer is all of the above. All right. Also on that, let's take a look at learning outcomes. Okay. My goodness. Okay. Sorry about that, you guys. All right, I'm going to try to, there. Let's try this again. Can you guys try the poll feature again? So learning outcomes must be measurable and measured. State broadly what you want the participant to be able to accomplish after attending this session, which I didn't really emphasize, but when you do your learning outcomes, don't think in terms of your quality improvement project or your customer service data. Think about those things, but the outcome is really what you want to happen after this one session that you're doing. So you want those things to change. You want the education to contribute to that. But think about when you do your learning outcomes, think about this session. Okay, so must be measured.
Sorry.
I know. Thank you. So everybody vote in your head. So which of these are true? Learning outcomes must be measurable and measured. They state broadly what you want the participant to be able to accomplish after attending the session. And you have to have more than one. So are those all true, or are a couple of them true? Okay. The answer is the first two. You don't have to have more than one learning outcome. That's a really frequent question that people ask is, how many learning outcomes do I have to have? There's no set number that you need to have. You just need to make sure that you have learning outcomes. And really, to look at when you're in the early part of planning, what is it that I want people to accomplish when they're done with this? Okay. Planning committee, and we won't get through all this today. We'll probably continue it on the next call. And hopefully by the next call, we'll figure out the polling feature because it worked on the first webinar. We had some trouble with it when we were practicing today, so I'm not quite sure what's up with that. Okay, planning committee, as far as what has changed, we will, as Rita mentioned earlier, there will be a new bio form up on the website. If that's not posted yet, we'll make sure to post that. The bio form is still separate from the conflict of interest form. Speakers do not need bio forms. That's something that people are still having some hard time kind of wrapping their heads around, including me. You still need a process to make sure that your speakers are content experts, are the right people to do the job. You just don't need to tell us about it anymore. It's an expectation. ANCC expects the right to be able to vet their speakers and is no longer requiring that we ask for how you do that. So, and really, I think that that's true. I don't think we've ever had a concern about when we looked at an application and the activity records. I don't think we've ever had a concern about a speaker not being qualified. And just a reminder, I think most people are getting this, but the bio forms are only needed for the nurse planner and the content experts on the planning committee and content reviewers. So
Bioforms are not required for speakers and authors. So that's really the newest thing I think people are still getting used to. If you're doing them for your nurse planner and you're doing them for the content expert on your planning committee, most people don't have content reviewers. And remember, a content reviewer is somebody that the nurse planner brings in to review the content for whether it's quality or best available evidence or bias. A content reviewer is not on the planning committee. Okay. So, let's see if I covered everything here. Okay. So, for your planning committee, do you have to have a content reviewer? I hope the bubbles above your head all say no. Do you have to have a content expert and a nurse planner? The answer to that is yes. The planning committee fills out an application for the PNP to review. That answer is no. And we talked about this on the last ANCC call with the nurse peer review leaders from the different approver units like WNA. And I think one of the things that we try to do is get everybody speaking the same language. A provider should never refer to their educational activity record form as an application. I know you all have much more to worry about in the day than that, but the issue is that ANCC does not want providers to be approving educational activities. And there is quite a bit of concern when there's any indication that that might be happening. And so one of the things that you can do in your planning process is it's fine to have somebody else do the paperwork, and it's fine for the primary nurse planner to review that. But in your process, in your language, don't call it approval. Don't call it an application. It's just part of your planning process. Somebody does the planning, maybe somebody's helping with documentation, maybe part of your process is for the primary nurse planner to review that. It doesn't have to be. But try to move along with us with the language as far as not calling it an application and not calling it approval. So this is still the biggest question. It took me a long time to wrap my head around this bio issue, who needs them and who doesn't. So if you have questions, please just continue to ask. I have no problem with that. Okay, best available evidence. Really, the only change is that the EPT isn't required anymore. The citations are right in the application. And we used to request that you list for a website that if there wasn't a data publication that you would list when you access that website for the information, and we don't request that anymore. So citation, most of you weren't doing it anyway. So the citation piece and using best available evidence especially has not changed. Okay. Conflicts of interest. WNA used to say that a planner's conflict of interest could not be resolved. And to align with ANCC, if you can legitimately change a planner's role, if you have a planner that has a conflict of interest, if you can really resolve that, for example, if it's possible to change their role in planning so that they are in no way in contact with the content that they have a relevant relationship to, then if somebody has a conflict of interest on your planning committee, then that is, if you can resolve it, that's fine. And if you could see me, you could see that I would be frowning. I think it's really difficult to resolve a planner conflict of interest, but I also respect the fact that this is an ANCC criteria, not mine. So if you can legitimately change the planner's role, if they have a conflict of interest, they can still be on your planning committee. Nurse planners should really, if you have a conflict of interest, if you can, if you have another nurse planner that can step in, that is what should happen. And we can talk about that. There's a lot of issues around what if there's a nurse planner conflict of interest, and we can talk about those at another time. Remember, this is not new. It is not an urban myth. It's for real. Employees of a commercial interest may not speak for contact hours. And since we started talking about that, I've gotten some really great questions from you guys that just say, hey, here's the organization. Here's who's speaking. Can I do this or not? So there's some really good information there. Okay, and as far as the resolving conflicts of interest, again, nothing new there. The only thing I can tell you is that we pick up on when we review your sample activities, when you renew your provider status, is if you have an activity on August 8th and you got your conflict of interest form on August 7th, that's going to raise a big red flag. The whole purpose of getting those COI forms is to be able to assess whether or not there is a conflict of interest. Okay. Sorry, I just lost that. Okay, so question, the presenter, I would say, these are really good questions. The presenter is a content expert. I hope that's why they're presenting, and that's why you chose them to speak on a topic, is because they are an expert. They do not have to fill out a WNA biographical form. Okay, that took me a long time to get my head around, but they don't have to do that. And then as far as who signs the nurse planner's conflict of interest, that is a great question, and that would be another person on the planning committee. So if you have one person on the planning committee, they can sign it. If you have numerous people, it's usually another nurse or someone who's involved in the planning and who has done some planning so that they're familiar at least a little bit with the criteria. It's not an ideal situation, but the whole issue is that you can't assess your own conflict of interest. Okay?
Mary Kay, this is Megan. Can I ask a clarifying question?
Absolutely.
So you need to have at least two people on your planning committee, one of whom needs to be the nurse planner and one of whom needs to be a content expert. Now, the nurse planner could be the content expert, but those two members of the planning committee need to complete bio and COI forms, correct?
Correct. Everybody has to complete a COI form, and then the nurse planner needs to complete a biographical data form, and any content expert on the committee, whether you have one of them or 20 of them, if they are a content expert on the planning committee, they need to fill out or provide biographical information.
Okay.
Okay.
So
okay.
Question here.
This is Heidi Monroe. What do we need to get from speakers if we don't need a bio form? We just need a conflict of interest, and then are we still getting an educational planning table?
Okay, great question. You need a conflict of interest form from your speakers, and we will not ask you, WNA will not ask you for evidence anymore in your activity record form that asks, how do you know you had a good speaker, basically? How do you know you picked the right person? And that's where you would have the bio form for us, and we'd look through it and go, oh, yeah, this person is qualified to present this. ANCC feels that providers can do that themselves. So you're really in charge of vetting your speakers, and we will not be asking how you do that. We'll not be asking for evidence of how you do that. You can still feel free to use the bioform. You don't have to. And then you ask, the educational planning tables, those are now optional. And because the citations are now listed in the application, and all we require now is an agenda.
For most of us, I think we get the citations from the educational planning tables that the speakers, fill out. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you still want to use them, I would say go for it.
Yeah.
You can definitely do that.
Okay, so it's basically, it's just the only thing we have to submit or keep a record of is the conflict of interest form then for speakers.
Mm-hmm. So, yep, exactly.
All right. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. Oh, we only have 5 minutes. Okay. Megan, are you good, or did you have other questions?
No, I just responded to Rachel's note there. So we're
good. Oh, okay. All right. Okay, we've got just about 5 minutes left.
Mary Kay.
Yeah.
This is Kathy with Fox Valley Health Professionals. Can you just go over what qualifies you as a content expert?
That is a really good question. Think of it in terms as being a subject matter expert. So what would, I can even put that in here. What would qualify you as a content expert or a subject matter expert? I would say it's your experience, so how experienced you are in the particular area.
Mm-hmm.
What are your credentials? Do you have a background in the topic? If you're doing a session on, let's say, something neurological related, do you have a content expert on your committee that knows something about neurology? Do they have experience so they can really help you vet the speakers? And also, really as kind of a check person for the content. So let me say it a different way. If MediStar does a continuing nursing education activity, and we always have a content expert and a nurse planner on the committee, we would look to that content expert to review PowerPoints, for example. We would look to them when we have communication with the speaker. Usually, for a large conference, there's a content expert assigned to each speaker to work with them. So that's, when we say content expert, I think we're talking about experience, your credentials in that area. So, is it when it's a specific topic, do you have somebody on your planning committee that's knowledgeable about the topic? And then that person also to really assess the information coming in from the speaker. And a content expert would be helpful in reviewing PowerPoint slides, for example. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but our organization's so, and I know this doesn't pertain to most people in this group, but our organization's so small,
mm-hmm.
And it's specifically targeted for nurse practitioners, so
mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm not sure how we kind of go about that. Maybe you and I just need to have a
mm-hmm.
Separate conversation about that.
Yep. Let's talk offline, Kathy, because I think you're doing it from the record.
Question about the content expert piece. I'm so sorry. It's
no,
great.
No, please.
So,
yeah.
Have a presenter that is also the content expert, because sometimes we get really obscure presentations where we aren't going to be able to find an expert other than the presenter.
Mm-hmm.
So is that okay, or do we need to find someone separate from the presenter?
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the best way to answer this, because that's a lot of times that's where your content reviewer comes in. So you don't have somebody on the planning committee, But if you have a speaker with an obscure topic, and let's say you need to review their PowerPoint presentation, that's where you would hopefully be able to grab somebody with some expertise in that area to review that. So I would look to a content reviewer outside of the committee to fill that role. And if you have a specific example, we could talk about offline and bring it back to the next call. That would be great.
Okay, so what I'm hearing, just to confirm, is that we should have a separate content expert other than the presenter. Is that correct?
I am going to say yes.
Okay.
And again, it kind of goes back to, okay, then what is our expectation for the content expert? Let's talk about, I'm going to put that down to talk about on the next call.
Okay.
Because I think that is an issue that other people are going to have no matter what the size of the provider unit is. And I'm sorry, I know Kathy asked the question before. Who just asked that question?
Rachel Justice.
Thank you. Okay, we'll talk about that on the next call.
Thank you.
Thanks for your questions, you guys. I really appreciate that. The only way I know you're awake is if we could answer the polls, I would know that. But just your questions really tell me that you're out there and that this information is relevant. Okay, it's 1 o'clock. I have a meeting. I bet that a lot of you do, too. Thanks for joining the call. We'll pick this up next month. If you have questions in the meantime, please let me know. And on the next approver call that I'm on with ANCC, I'll bring up the topic of content experts and what do we really mean by that? What do we expect? Okay, you guys are helping me learn, too. Have a great day, and thanks so much. And we'll talk to you